I am unashamed. What about you?
Five, four, three.
Did you actually do the countdown, babe?
I just did it.
She did it.
I just did
well,
it.
I tell you.
Good job, miss.
You give the wife an inch and she comes in and takes over. Good job, babe.
Nice welcome.
We have a new producer today on the Unashamed Podcast, Missy. Welcome, Missy. Welcome, Mom.
Thank you.
Welcome, hello. Lisa.
Thanks.
We have made a major upgrade in terms of beauty on the Unashamed Podcast for those of you that are watching by having our lovely wives join us today on the podcast, which is always a blessing. Lisa and I are coming from the Southern Lair while Missy and Mom are there in studio. So we're excited to have you guys.
Thanks.
Yep, we're glad to be here. Me,
you're,
feels
Mom,
here
you're glad
all the
to be
time.
Anywhere. So I got to start off. I realize I'm time stamping our podcast because we're a couple of weeks out on our releases. So by the time you hear this, you know, college football will roll on. But this past weekend, for the first time for me in a long time, because the last few years when the Alabama LSU game is on, Lisa and I have been on the road. So I haven't really had a chance to really just enjoy the game. And so this year we were here in Alabama. I had my freshly minted LSU flag hanging on my house, very much in the minority in my neighborhood. But and it was quite the game that Lisa and I were able to watch together. So, Jace, I got to hear about what happened at your house. Were you home? Were you on the road? What was your story?
It took a while for me to have my schedule arranged where I would get one day off, and it was that Saturday and Sunday. So I thank everyone. There's a lot of people I want to thank for that, but it was awesome.
And it sounds so, like an acceptance speech. So many people to thank.
Well, I'm feeling pretty good. I mean, the game was amazing. We were 14-point underdogs. And look, we love Louisiana. And so we support our state college.
I was
college.
Trying to call you to say what the odds were, like you always tell me. You know, how much?
I had all the missed calls. I returned your calls immediately, and you didn't answer.
Well, she was on the phone already with Jeff.
Yeah,
that's what, didn't answer. Yeah.
That's what I've noticed with you, Kay. You'll call somebody back, but give them at least a minute to call you right back.
No, that's wasted dead space.
Then you're already on to the next call. And so then when you finish that call, you call me back. Well, guess what? 1 minute later, because I was trying to get my phone, because I'm like, who would call me during the LSU game? Oh.
Me?
It's Kay. So I tried to call you back. Guess what? No. And we continued that during the whole game, and I never talked to you again until right now.
Well, I talked to other people, but I didn't talk to you.
We have a rule that Jace didn't even know where his phone is during the game. So I'm surprised you kept trying to call her back, because usually people know not to even call us.
I'm honored that you tried to call me back.
I tried to call you back. Mm-hmm. So we were there.
She learned that.
Missy invited her parents, or did they invite themselves?
They invited themselves. But
which was okay. I was a little nervous about it at first because, look, they've seen me during an LSU game because I'm vulnerable in that situation, good or bad. During the game, now once the game ends, it's over. I have win or lose. I leave it in the living room on the field. So we had them there, and we had our little one there. He had his little LSU. Missy put a LSU.
Lisa, you bought that for him.
LSU
little
jumper.
LSU onesie. I put it on him.
Mm-hmm.
Which created a problem because later on during the night, bedtime occurred. And then all of a sudden, Missy's like saying, no, we need to keep this down.
Well, I'm just like no screaming and hollering out loud or you get to go put the baby back to sleep. That was kind of the deal.
And so I was patient and understanding. I think the line I gave was, if they win this game, I'll tear this house down.
Yes.
To the foundation. This is marriage, right?
Right.
This is a great preview to marriage.
It is.
Her parents were trying to video me a couple times. I was like, no. It stays in the living room. Because there was a lot of antics and the whole state. I'm sure that registered.
It would have been a great show. They could have filmed each one of us watching it. because I was funny too.
Well, they were checking the earthquake last I heard to see if when the 2-point conversion was good, to see if it registered on the earthquake meter.
I would like to know that decibel number for sure from the stadium level. That would have been amazing.
Mm-hmm. I actually had an injury over the celebration. My adrenaline was pumping so much I didn't realize it, but about an hour later, I could not lift my arm up. And it's still sore to this day.
When's the last time the crowd has gone into the field when the game
was? It's the week before.
They tear the goalpost down.
The week before. So it was, the week before they beat Ole Miss. And I'm like, I think we need to act like we've been here before.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, Phil, you got to remember, not everyone stormed the field. I think basically.
Well, the field looked
like it, yeah.
Well, you saw those who had. They were the no win to say win losers stormed the field.
Yeah.
I think they'd had a few adult beverages at that point.
Probably. Oh, yeah.
Because most of the people I saw going to the field fell down en route.
I thought they were just so happy.
Yeah, they were, and they were drunk. But it was great. I'm glad we didn't. I was just so glad that really. We went for two because in the back of my mind, Missy, in our marriage, I've documented this, that we didn't have a lot in common when we got married. We basically both spoke the English language, which was great because you think if we spoke two different languages, that would be difficult. And we loved Jesus. I don't think there was anything else right off the bat, was it, babe?
We'll get to that.
Okay.
But
I wanted to say this, Al. I wanted to say this. But one thing that has developed, besides our kids that we have in common, is that we watch football together. And she's more of a Saints fan than I mean, I love the Saints.
Thank you. Thank you.
Missy's more of a Saints fan. I'm more of an LSU fan. But she did get up off the couch, and I saw some cries for emotion. But I was so happy they went for two because there's been an argument in our house for the last 5 years about the role of the kicker. And it's just because I thought if this guy misses this, not only would we lose if they kicked it instead of going for two, then it's going to fuel this argument. And I don't know if we want to get into it here, but Missy.
It's not an argument with college football. It is an argument for pro, NFL pro kicker. Okay. College kickers, they're kids, they got jobs, they have school. But if you're an NFL pro kicker, you literally have one job.
Which you get paid millions of dollars for.
You have one job.
Our last argument, it concluded with me calling Missy a kicker Pharisee because she said there's no excuse for you ever to miss a kick.
There's not.
Missy, we had the same discussion.
I'm not a Pharisee, though, because I'm not a kicker who says that I'm perfect. I'm not a kicker. So I can't. I'm not. That's not a true analogy.
Demanding them to be perfect.
I'm saying that if I was their boss, they better have a darn good excuse come Monday morning when they come into my office and tell me the reasons why they missed that regular field goal.
The extra points, what you're saying. They should never.
The extra point. That's right. The PAT. If you miss a PAT, there should be you should better have a list of reasons when you come Monday morning in my office.
Missy, you sound like Peyton Manning. Remember a few years ago, he famously said in a post-game press conference that we lost the game thanks to our idiot kicker.
Now, that's something she would say.
Not in a press conference, but.
But during the argument, what I found more shocking is she said, it's just like the NBA. There's no excuse for you to miss ever a free throw. You're standing there on a line.
I don't understand that either.
She's like, remember the
pressure. Babe, we're humans. Things happen. She's like,
the pressure that's coming from the stands and they're hollering. And I mean, a lot is riding on this.
She has an answer for that.
You'd have to have nerves.
That's what makes you a pro.
You're a pro.
That's what makes you a pro. That's why you get paid the big bucks, literally.
I'm just saying, there's a lot of pressure.
But nobody's perfect.
That's right.
That's what I
said. Get your list ready for whenever you mess up. because there's somebody waiting in the wings to take your place. So you better have good reasons.
I can see both sides of this argument. Missy, you're winning me over. I agree. So Mom, I got to know, what did you do at when LSU won the game? Did
I jumped out of the chair and nearly killed myself. Tripped over dogs and everything else. I was up and down, up and down. I was a nervous wreck.
Did you scream at any point?
I don't know, did I?
Yep.
I know the dogs didn't know what was happening. They were saying something's going on around here.
Well, it was funny because we were down here and I went out and had some errands on that morning. And so I'm going around town. Of course, I got my LSU stuff on and, you know, I'm getting a lot of grief from people in stores and, you know, that kind of stuff. But it was all in fun. But when I went into the grocery store down here, everybody was so into it. They were announcing over the loudspeaker, all right, who in the store is, you know, pulling for LSU? I mean, across the whole grocery store. So it was really great. And they did all the SEC schools because there's a lot of people represented down here. So it was a buzz. And I will say, I know we have a ton of Alabama fans. So I know we've made you relive this today, but just understand you guys have been better consistently for a long time. So you got to, you know, when something like this happens, we're going to have to crow just a little bit. But
even the non-football fans, though, Al, this game was something, the way it ended was so crazy. Because, look, I stood up. I thought, okay, we scored, you know, in the overtime. And then all of a sudden, I thought, is he actually contemplating going for 2 points at home? And we all stood up.
I said, no, he's not that dumb. He's not going to do that.
That's what Missy, she's like, there's no way.
That's just
he would
stupid.
Do that in front of 100,000 people. I was like, what about the rest of the state, the whole nation? Yeah, and then when they went to, did they go to commercial? Yeah, because they took a timeout.
He ran down the field as fast as he can, screaming, hollering, timeout, timeout. I said, oh, thank goodness he's come to his senses. It's not. He's not going
to
do that.
Went to commercial, but I told you. What did I say? I said he's still going to go for two. I said he's doing it, but they just want to make sure they have the play. So it comes back. They're fixing to go for two. Well, what I noticed it did, Al. I want to make this point because I couldn't even sleep for 3 or 4 hours. Just the adrenaline. I was watching the crowds, and I mean, I went
back and watched the whole thing again and fast forwarded through commercials.
I did. So, but nobody made this point. And what he did, because, you know, this is personal for us because Nick Saban used to be our coach. And so Louisiana has a weird kind of relationship here. But Brian Kelly did something that up until this moment, I've seen no other coach do against Nick Saban. He ambushed him with the element of surprise. And I'm going to make this argument because they called a timeout. And the Alabama staff was so flustered that when it came back out and we were finished running the play, they had 12 men on the field.
Yeah, I remember
There's a guy running. And it hit me in that moment. I thought, they've actually have a surprise attack here. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, it shocked me that we pulled it off and scored, but it seemed easy.
Well, Alabama is used to being the intimidator.
Exactly.
And they've gotten away with it for so long. And now they were like, wait a second.
Another factor, Missy, to your earlier point, we did lose the first game of the season when a kicker missed, you know, had an extra point block, you know, that you were just assuming, you know, we're going into overtime. So there was that, you know, that we've actually experienced
but
this year.
He missed it because the line didn't block, which is my argument. This is a team sport. There's a lot of things that can go wrong, babe, when the ball is snapped. The guy's got to put it down there. He's got to flip it around. He's got to hold it. Line has to
block. We've covered that. But I think what I liked best about the post game, I know we need to move on, but Brian Kelly in the interview, I mean, everybody talking about this afterwards with tears in his eyes, I'm like, okay, we had our doubts after the Florida State game. I'll give you that. We had our doubts. We weren't hating. I wasn't hating on him. I just had my doubts if he was the right man to pull the job off. But now seeing his heart for all of the boys and the team and love of the state and seeing his reaction with the fans, I'm like, okay, he's in. He's family. That's
it.
They
had that new coach, and they lost to somebody right off the bat, the first loss.
Florida State.
Yeah. Well, when I saw that, I said, they're going to have a tough row to hoe.
But yeah.
Remarkably, I mean, I looked up and I said, man, these people they've come to their senses here.
Oh,
it's not good. Just a game. I know people say, oh, it's just a football game. How silly. It's a sense of pride in your state and pride in what you've been through with your state and with your school and with your team and with your family.
It is.
So it's so much more than just a game. And I think that's what makes it so much fun when you win.
It is. And it's all like right, eating fish. There's things that happen that are wrong. They use a lot of four-letter words and all that. You got to spit out the bones.
Yeah.
But overall, it's a good thing to enjoy for your state.
That was in the pro game yesterday we watched.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just don't read lips.
That's right. Yeah. Don't read lips.
Really, don't zoom in on those coaches' faces.
Let's take a break. So it's time to talk about the kitchen knife game, and it's time to take it up a notch, as a certain chef might say. One of our sponsors is Kamakoto Knives, and they sent us some, and they're amazing. Dad, you've used them,
I've used them, yeah.
Very sharp.
They're sharp, well-made.
So they use steel that's sourced from Japan. Each blade is made with techniques that have been honed and perfected for generations of knife smiths. And these things are really fantastic. You can also get a little, we bought a little whetstone that they make specifically for these knives to keep them sharp, because they really come to quite the edge. They come in a beautiful heavy-duty ash wood box. Each blade is individually inspected and comes with a lifetime guarantee, which can't beat that. So these knives are what they call, Dad, cut through your ribeye like butter sharp, and they really are. So check them out. Make great gifts. If you go ahead and buy now, Kamakoto is offering you an extra $50 off their site, which is fantastic, on top of their Black Friday sale. So go to kamakoto.com/Phil. Use the offer code Phil for an extra $50 off. That's Kamikoto, kamakoto.com/Phil. So go to kamakoto.com/Phil. Use the offer code Phil for an extra $50 off. All right. So we got that out of our system. And like I said, we beg forgiveness for all our Alabama fans. We love you in Christ. So it just goes to show, in the SEC, on any given week, you pull for whoever, right? So the reason that that we asked the ladies to come on our episode is because we had a very, I feel like, Jace, a spirited discussion from Mark 10 on our last podcast with the three of us plus Zach. And we talked about marriage in the context of, you know, it wasn't really about marriage, I don't think, is kind of the conclusion we came to, even though that's the topic. It was more about legalism and law, as Jesus is dealing with this particular situation. But I felt like we needed to get some female perspective. Obviously, the same thing I think the podcast audience loves about our podcast is our commitment to the Word. But I'm going to tell you, you know, we're on here all the time, me, Jason, Dad, and Zach, but our wives have been studying, teaching, being impacted and impacting others with the Word of God all the years we have. And so I respect all of your opinions, but also your study and your study, you know, in any of the Bible. So that was the reason why I wanted to have you guys on. In the last context, and Jason, you can help me out as well. We talked about there tends to be this tendency, which is why this question was posed by the Pharisees. They were trying to trap him with this question about, you know, is it lawful to have a divorce? Because they're trying to get Jesus basically on the record saying, going against Moses. And so Jesus, as he often does, brings them back to the original truth. And the way we described it on the last podcast is he presents marriage as this beautiful gift that's been here since the beginning. That's why he goes all the way back to Genesis 1 and Genesis 2. And so his answer to their legalistic question was, here's the way God has designed it from the beginning. And he just gives this beautiful picture about marriage. So I kind of wanted you guys just to give us basically your, not only opinion of this text, but also just marriage in general. And Mom, I wanted to start with you, because, you know, you got a movie coming out about your marriage. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, not many people can say that, right? I mean, about your early life. So how do you growing up, your view of marriage, what you were taught, how did that impact you going into your marriage and relationship with Dad?
Well, as I tell the story to everybody, it was because I was raised as much by my grandmother as I was my family, because they had a store and they worked all the time. So I listened to my grandmother for hours, and we'd sit in the swings in different places. And we talked about, and I told her I already knew I wanted a husband. I knew what I wanted him to look like and act like, and that I wanted four children. And, you know, I had it all planned in my head. Of course, it wasn't like I had anybody picking them because I was just young. But she always told me, she said, well, just know one thing. When you marry, you give a vow to God, and it's for life. And she said, and all your fights and struggles, you got to stick through them and just know that God's there and you can do it. So I was like, why would I have fights and struggles? I don't fight now. I'm not a fighting person. And she said, you'll have problems. And I said, why? She said, because everybody does in a marriage. Some people will talk about it, some people won't, but there's always disagreements in a marriage. So I went in there thinking, no matter what he does, no matter what anything happens, I'm not going to leave him. I'm going to stay true to the vows and the marriage.
Well, we talked about last week, you know, marriage is hard. People are selfish.
Yeah.
And by that, we're sinful on both sides. And things change. Life change, especially when kids happen, health problems happen, people die that are close to us, you know, friends betray us. Then you throw in work and making a living and you lose your job. And so, you know, we made a point that you always marry the wrong person because you're bringing out the worst just by spending time on a daily basis with another human being. And we're sinful people.
Well, we were definitely different. He was smart. I wasn't. What's the other reason? No, I was going to think of it. There's several of them. I had money. He had none.
What I was going to say, though, is, you know, the context of what we covered, if you read Matthew 19, 1 through 12, and you read our in Mark 10, I mean, when you combine them, you kind of figure out what they were trying to do. Because they were trying to trap him, saying, well, how come Moses in, where was that, Deuteronomy 24? They were allowing people to get divorced for a variety of reasons. And so they were trying to trap him to see which side of that he was on. It was kind of like the new way here, where, you know, you get tired of her, she doesn't cook well, or you can divorce her. So they're trying to trap him. And in both references, you know, Jesus says, well, he allowed you to get that divorce because your hearts were hard. What was happening was they were making sinful decisions. And then now scenarios were coming up where it's like, well, what do we do with the first woman that I was married to after three marriages? Because now she wants to get back married again. So he was making the point, you screwed all this up. But it wasn't that way from the beginning. From the beginning, and he then defines marriage, and he he shows that he designed it and that he defined it, and that it's actually a beautiful thing that 1 + 1 = 1 in the Father. So that's why when you fast forward to all of us, we've been married, all of us, gee whiz.
A lot of years.
You realize all the problems that come. I mean, I think Missy's the greatest quality that I did not know she had was the ability to have a new normal when life changes or throws you a curveball. I mean, she does way better than I do about arising to the occasion and saying, well, this is just how it is.
Give me a week.
You don't realize that the teaching about it, you read about it, and the final word on it when Jesus said, all right, here's the way marriage works. But even then, having good marriages, you must teach what it has to be an ongoing people reaching out. You two are married, you've got your children, well, all of a sudden there's another one. well, there's people contemplating marriage or they're married and they're looking for a little guidance. And what makes a smooth, kind, good marriage? So the teaching part has to be done. Even when you say, okay, I'll stay with it to heaven to hold no matter what, you must teach what is in accord with sound doctrine. He's talking to a young preacher. Teach the older men. He starts with older men to be praiseworthy, respect, self-control, sound in truth, in love, endure. Teach the older women. So that tells you that if you don't have instruction among married people, some of them, the ones who are obeying what Jesus said, it's a one-shot deal. Stay with them. You know, it's for forever. If you don't get that in their head, and you on a constant teaching scheme, I mean, how in the world would you expect it to turn out? Teach the older women to be reverent in the way they live, not to be slanderers, not addicted to much wine. Teach what is good. Then they can teach, train the younger women to love their husband, children. So it's one of these things where you just can't say good luck to you. There has to be some intervention in the kingdom of God with each other and develop relationships. Miss Kay and them are always going up to town. They have these women's meetings. How many do you have every week?
Just one a week now, maybe two. Well, no, it's one a week and one once a month.
But that's what they do. I'm sure you, Missy, you all do to some extent the
She's
same thing.
She's done it before.
Because people are looking back, and when they see marriage, so many of them falling apart, it becomes a prerequisite. They need some training. Well, especially in the kingdom of God, if you're going to claim Jesus, you're going to have to go with what he said about marriage, one man, one woman for life. So you see in our culture, that's a bone to be chewed, Jace.
Well, the training starts at...
Hang on, miss. Let's take a break. So we talk a lot on the podcast, especially for what Lisa and I are doing about pro-life, but also, you know, it's not just speaking to women about abortion and, you know, talking about it on the life inside the womb. It's also after Jason, Missy, or, you know, they're doing, helping out with fostering children, adoption. There's so many components to the pro-life issue. And along the way, it's great to meet like-minded people. And one of those groups is called 40 Days for Life. And they've been a sponsor on our podcast for a while. We've had Sean, who's their CEO, on the podcast to talk about what they're doing. They have great resources about in the debate about abortion, because sometimes people feel like they don't know what to say. And so they've written some great books about sort of how to have those discussions, whether you're at work or whatever. They have over 1 million volunteers in 1,000 cities all around the world. And they get together and they pray, and they're making an impact and a difference. So I want you to check them out. Check out their locations. Maybe you can get involved with this great organization. They got a great podcast. As I said, they have great resources on their website. They got a free magazine that you can also check out. It's 40daysforlife.com. They're going to keep you updated on how abortion is ending in a post-Roe America. So that's 40daysforlife.com.
The training starts at home when they're babies, and they watch their parents, because if you see generation after generation, it's very hard to change whatever cycle that is, good cycle or a bad cycle. And so your boys saw how y'all were able to work it out in the tough scenarios. Yeah. Okay, you did fight. You are a fighter, because you fought to keep your marriage
together.
I had a lot
of patience too.
But you gave Phil, you know, those ultimatums of you can't come back home until you get your life right. I'm not going to subject myself and my boys to that again. That was a fighting moment.
Yeah, that was after many years.
Right.
But I will say I felt like in my mind I had been patient and given all I could give. Well, actually, you're the one that kicked us out anyway. You remember that night, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that even goes with the argument here is, you know, human beings are always looking for a way out when it gets uncomfortable or bad things happen, or we're bitter, or, and Jesus is going back as this looking as something that you want to stay in. This is a beautiful thing. I mean, it's a, you think about just from a societal standpoint, this is a fabric of dynamic societies, having parents who love each other and have this special bond that was put together by the Almighty. And then you see the kids that come forth having a foundation to where when problems do arise.
If everything goes south, it doesn't take long for it to really have an impact on your culture.
Exactly.
But, you know, Missy brought up a really interesting thought, and Lisa, I want to bring you into this. You mentioned, Missy, about when you were children and things that both happen and things that you do affect how you're going to be later in your life. All those things do. They're factors in the home you grow up in. And so I would say, babe, how did your young life affect ultimately our marriage and then our redemption that came out of that? How would you describe that?
Well, I think you're right. I think 95% of the time, when kids are raised in a God-fearing and a loving home where the parents love and respect one another, then sure. I mean, they tend to take on those qualities. But there are, you know, there are other times where the kids, you know, grow up and they don't carry on those qualities. And so there are exceptions to everything. But I also think that whenever you're not brought up in that home where, you know, the parents take you to church and actually live the Christian life. Or I think also whenever things happen as children. And, you know, in my case, at 7 years old, I had an uncle that started molesting me. Well, that, you know, at 7 years old, it's wrong. You don't know it's wrong because you're 7 years old. But at the same time, I think that instills something in you at that early age. One, it instilled dishonesty into me because I couldn't tell anybody what was happening to me. Two, I think it instilled a self-worth, which I had none. I really felt as though my lot in life was to please men. The third thing that I think it instills is just that respect factor. And I had no respect for men. Now, I had respect for my father, but he was the only one, you know? And so as you grow up and as you interact with the opposite sex, those things matter. Those things come into play because when your path, you're going down a path and it takes several detours like mine did, then whenever your brain is firing, it's not firing on the right things, you know, it's firing on those lies that Satan has instilled in you as a child. And so, of course, I think that as Al and I, after we got married, I had loved him so long, I thought, you know, I think now it wasn't love. I think it was just, you know, a strong like maybe. But I had wanted so much that kind of person in my life because I was not raised with that kind of person. So I wanted him so badly. And then to come into the family and have a family, I mean, what I saw in the Robertson family was respect of one another, the love of God, the love of church and your brethren, hospitality, evangelism. I mean, those are the things that I saw in the Robertson family and wanted so much in my life.
But it was a measuring stick you couldn't measure up to.
That's right. But felt. I could not measure up to that because, oh, by the way, did you know I had all this other stuff in my life, you know? And so I feel as though that really does affect a person as they go on. Now, I'm grateful. The Robertson family forgave me whenever I had an affair and committed adultery on Alan. Alan forgave me. God forgave me, and I'm grateful for that. But I'm so grateful that at that point, God showed me the lies that Satan had been telling me for all of those years. But again, as you said, Phil, that came through being with other people and those people putting that into my life. And so whenever I did counseling, whenever I talked with other people, even Miss Kay, I mean, then they told me what my worth was. They showed me, they studied with me. And I think that is how that I was able to change my life. And subsequently, we have a great marriage, not perfect, but we have a great marriage now.
Well, let's take another break. So with, you know, elections and, man, back and forth, there's a lot of crazy. It's a pretty crazy divide right now between left and right. And, you know, we have to do business in this world. So a lot of times you're doing business with the folks you don't necessarily agree with. One of our sponsors is probably a company that you would agree with their value system, because it's a lot like ours as conservatives. It's called Patriot Mobile. It's America's only Christian mobile phone provider. And they're also a force for conservative values. They take a portion of your bill and they fund conservative causes and candidates who believe in sanctity of life, freedom of speech, the Second Amendment, and they're making a difference. They also have affordable plans for you, your family, and even your business. They offer the same nationwide coverage as the major carriers because they use multiple major networks. Plus, they support conservative values. So if you want to check them out and see about switching over, go to patriotmobile.com/Phil, or you can call them at 972-PATRIOT. You're going to get free activation with the offer code Phil. They've got special discounts for veterans and first responders. So join the movement. Make the switch today. PatriotMobile.com/Phil or call them at 972-PATRIOT.
And Dad, it kind of goes back to what you had talked about. I mean, the common theme here is the capacity of forgiveness and then change, life change. And Dad had to change in his late 20s. Lisa had to change in her early 30s. And then from there, we were like rocket ships mm-hmm. that took off for Christ. I do, Missy, want you to speak to, you and Jace obviously have a different, you know, set of circumstances than us, the other two couples. Tell me what you've learned about you guys over the course of 32 plus years of marriage. And, you know, Jace has talked a lot on the podcast about you guys not having a lot in common going in.
I know. It's not just the podcast.
It's an interesting statement, Al. He ends this little session up about teaching the older men, the older women, the younger men. You do that with soundness of speech that cannot be condemned. Just think about being careful on what you say, so that those who oppose you, and there's always opposition, the evil one and the work, they may be ashamed when they're watching you because they've nothing bad to say about us. In other words, if they're trying to drum up some way to get at you because of the way you operate between you and your wife, but they hear it's good sound teaching, they just don't really have anything they can accuse you of. So that's the goal, but that's how critical you know you're being watched by everyone in your family structure.
Well, y'all do have a past, but the good thing that they can accuse you, and it's all true, but you've already confessed it all to the world. So there's nothing new. And I think that's what's so good about another quality of the Robertson family and y'all, especially y'all two couples, is that the only reason that you're putting it out there is to help other people, because it definitely doesn't make you look good. So that's a great quality, I think. But, and Lisa, one thing before I answer your question, Al, whenever you said, you know, the Robertson family forgave me and all of that, it sounds all beautiful and clean and crisp and loving. And it wasn't, it was a tough time when all of that happened. And forgiving you was not just a decision that we made. It was a process that we had to go through ourselves without you in the room. and without your presence, and it was not pretty, you know? And so I think that's what marriage, that was a relationship that we had to work out outside of y'all's marriage. We had to work that out as family, and that took a while. And so when I think about the commitment to marriage, I thought about this when you said, let's, y'all are going to be on this podcast to talk about marriage. And I look around at a lot of people around us, mostly younger, that are going through divorce or contemplating divorce or have just gone through it. They have so many reasons why they weren't prepared, or it just fell apart, or he started slandering me, verbally abusing me, I can't take it anymore, all this stuff. And not that those are not valid reasons, but where is the commitment that we made before God and before witnesses? And I can only think of one other commitment you make before God and before witnesses, and that is to your Creator when you accept Christ as your Lord. It's that one and your commitment to your spouse for the rest of your life. You don't even make a commitment when you take your babies home from the hospital. They just hand them to you. Like, good luck. Even, I mean, seriously.
Really?
You don't have to sign a thing. And even when I took this new baby home, I just signed that I had legal authority to make decisions on his behalf. Not that I would love him and commit to him and put him before me no matter what. Marriage is a very unique institution that is none, it's like none other. And so it requires a lot more time, a lot more energy than maybe you really feel like putting in, because you're dealing with another adult and you think he should be treating me the way that I want to be treated. You know, we kind of give a pass to our kids because they're kids. So I think that
a lot of them are saying now, just kill them. That way you won't have to raise them.
Well, that's true too. That's a whole other issue.
How about a sad, sad deal? Just get rid of them. That way you want to. That's the latest thing Satan's throwing at us.
I want to put an end, Al, to this whole, Jay says we don't have anything in common except Jesus and our kids.
I figured we were going to circle back.
I have a list.
Oh, you made a list? Teach me, babe.
I'm a list maker.
Teach me your ways.
So I'm going to just run through it real quick. You ready? And you can confirm or deny.
Okay.
Jesus, which consists of, well, our lives and commitment to Jesus, but we love great worship.
We do love great worship.
We're mission-minded.
Well, I thought all this was like Jesus.
Okay, that was under the Jesus category. Now, on our kids, we both wanted to make Karina our family.
Yeah.
Okay, and we also both decided to take in AK.
Yeah.
Okay.
Y'all did a great job with that, too.
Well,
that's ongoing.
That's ongoing. It's a liquid situation. Okay, here we go. Action movies. British crime shows.
Wow.
Good homemade food.
Yeah.
Good homemade food. Okay. We're not big sweets eaters.
No.
We're not big breakfast eaters. No. We agree on politics.
Well, yeah.
We're extremely patriotic.
Yes.
We support our troops. No. We support orphans overseas. We love learning about history. I'm still going. We really like our, y'all are going to love this, Al and Zach. We really like our Helix mattress.
Oh, yeah. All six of us can agree to that.
Good mattress.
Oh, yeah.
Jace got in bed after being in Virginia. He was like, oh, man, it's so good getting in this bed again. Okay, we like to every once in a while eat chips and queso as our meal.
That's true.
Okay. LSU football, we've covered that, and football overall.
Yep.
Working together for Duck Family Treasure. We have a goal of making that the best that we can possibly make it.
Okay.
And this is just kind of spur of the moment. I thought about this on the way down. We're very budget-minded. Both of us are very budget-minded, which really, that's great for a marriage because we don't really fight over money. We never have. So,
I'm not budget minded. I just don't. I'm just.
He doesn't spend any money.
I'm not worried about it.
But so. I don't really either. But yeah. Well, we didn't have any to spend, and that was we didn't go into debt either. So that's good.
Did you grow to those things you both have in common, or were they there from the beginning?
Well, you should have given me that list like 20 years ago.
I didn't think I had to sit down and make a list. I feel like I'm having to defend myself.
Give me the list.
All I'm saying is maybe you should get to know me a little bit better after 32 years of marriage.
Hang on. Let's take our last break.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
All right, so Missy's convinced me of two things. One is professional kickers should not miss an extra point. And number two, Jason and Missy have a lot in common. So thank you, Missy. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
But we needed a list.
Yeah, so now, Al, you'd remind him when he says, my wife and I don't have anything in common except Jesus.
Trust me, I will. I won't say remember the list.
So to put this in context, Al, instead of looking for a way out with the certificate of divorce, you need to look for a reason to stay in.
Yes, I could have made a list on things that we didn't have in common.
That's with always the good list.
That's yes, good that's true.
With the list.
That would be good. A very good way for people to learn to appreciate
I was gonna,
what they have
right?
in common.
I was going to say that about what Lisa shared, and boldly and courageously. And I mean, it's not easy to share those kind of things, and Lisa seems to do it to help other people, and we're appreciative of that. But and it was bumpy when you did that for a family. It took a couple years, I think,
it took a while.
But you know what? Now that I read these passages, it's like, and I hate to use this illustration for football, but it's true. You know, people get so negative and so down on their teams when just they lose hope. They're like, oh, fire the coach. This is not working, you know, and we all kind of go through that as football fans. Mm-hmm. You know, when you do that with people, you're underestimating God's grace. And because all my support to Al when that happened was, this is your way out. I was giving him door number one, go out this way. Door number two, go out that way. Go out the back door over here. There was never.
There was not a Lisa door.
It's over. That door, I had burned it to the ground. And we're kind of snickering, but it was like, you know, you lose hope in somebody and faith in somebody, and you're underestimating God's power and his word. You know, they were coming up with all these excuses and all these reasons, and they were having all these arguments, you know, and I just think it's beautiful and powerful what Jesus did. He just went back to the beginning.
Their argument was, is get rid of them, and he was saying,
You're missing the beauty of this. And so I think a lot of our marriages and a lot of people, and look, we all have our scraps and fights. I mean, we have scraps all the time. But, you know, you have to have these reminders of how beautiful this is despite our struggles and our mess-ups and God creates the most powerful union on the planet, and it's called marriage.
That's right.
Out the best in both of you working in the right direction despite all your failures and mess-ups. Incredible.
Yeah, yeah. In premarital counseling, sometimes we tell people to make a list of why you like one another or why you want to get married. And then we had one couple say, we're still adding on to that list. Because every year they find something different.
Yeah, they add to the list every year, which is a beautiful thought.
Which is great, because then whenever the hard times come, you pull out that list and then you can go, well, I mean, we used to do this. We used to do that. You know, I used to like that about you, and you used to like this about me. So I think it's important for us to remember exactly why we married one another. And, you know, I have a friend, Jo Neal. She's all of our friends. But, you know, she says, maybe you didn't marry the wrong person. Maybe you're just not the right person.
Which is to Chase's point. Yeah. Which Jesus makes it all right. Before we're getting toward the end of our podcast, before we get to overtime, I want to read the next little section, because I do think it's very relevant, especially in between, because later we're going to talk about this very impressive rich young man, that we're still in this concept of, you know, law versus grace. In verse 13, it says, people were bringing little children to Jesus to have him touch them. Now, and this is about the third reference in the last two chapters where Jesus is like addressing a child when he's talking about faith. But the disciples rebuked them. They rebuked them for bringing the kids. When Jesus saw this, and by the way, this is one of the few times in any of the Gospels you see this phrase about Jesus, he was indignant. He was not happy. He said to them, let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. I tell you the truth, anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it. And he took the children in his arms and he put his hands on them and he blessed them. So I want to interject that, because Missy, you talked about children quite a bit a minute ago, not only just the training that we do, but then also the impact that they have on our relationship. And I just found it interesting that in between these two sort of tests, one, this discussion about marriage from the Pharisees, and the next is going to be this young man comes up that basically says, I'm a lawkeeper. You know, why can't that be enough? He brings in these children, and when the disciples try to get the kids out of there, he said, whoa, 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 no. This is how you need to be. Mm-hmm. You need to be like these. So how do you look at this when you look at relationships, when you look at marriage, when you look at people's kids and mm-hmm. ways that it impacts them? Why is that so important to you guys? Why do you think he brings this into this?
I'm not sure how we can sum it up as we end this podcast in a pretty package, but children are just a visual reminder of what we should be like. But you could take them for granted if they're with you all of the time. That's what's been so the good thing about having one of the good things about having this new baby in our house is that we're reminded again, because it's been a few years since we had little ones in our house. We're reminded again about the beauty of the creation, about how God created us to be. And like, it's been a rough weekend, I'm not going to lie, because the baby has had snotty nose and not been happy and, you know, all of this. And he has been trying our patience, my patience. And yet, when he looks at us and we make him laugh, it's like the sweetest thing ever in the entire universe. Mm-hmm. He forgets that he's sick. He forgets that he was just told no 15 times that you can't grab that fireplace tool and pull it down your head, you know. And so he's so quick to forgive and so quick to love on and so quick to want to be loved. That's how we should be as adults. But we have so much hurt and anger in our past from grown relationships that have hurt us that we have our defense mechanisms up. And that's a lot of time comes in with that. We're going to flee from the marriage so quickly is because I can't take it anymore is usually the reason. It's that it's yourself that gets in the way of trying to work it out. Now, did Al have every justification of leaving Lisa? Yes. By law, he had every justification. And no one would have said you did the wrong thing if y'all would have gotten divorced. No one. But working it out was so much more beautiful, not just to your relationship, but to your children and your grandchildren and to generations to come and to all of us. So I think that's the hardest thing for people to get past is, but I'm right. Yes, you may be right. But is it worth the relationship? Because you're not going to just lose your spouse. You're going to lose all of your spouse's friends, all of your spouse's family, all of your so much more than just, well, I'm right. And I went out of this
marriage.
And
then
then the impact on children as well. So thank you, Missy, because that was the perfect way to wrap that. But I want to talk, I want to dive into that a little bit more in our overtime and talk about that just a little bit more. So if you want to follow us over, it's blazetv.com/unashamed. Still running a promo. If you use the promo code Phil, you get $10 off your subscription. So check us out in overtime with the ladies.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube, and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.